So hello and welcome to this Talking Rugby Union podcast with me, Chris Hill. And today we're going to do something slightly different to our usual podcast, as we'll be purely focusing on the community game and in particular the National Leagues, following last week's news that the NCAA are working alongside the RFU to get a cup competition up and running at the beginning of the 2021 year, following the cancellation of the league season last month. Throughout the podcast, we're going to include a few inserts as well. We will be hearing from Rotherham Titans commercial director John Whaling, who I'm not sure if anyone would have seen the news, but over the last 24, 48 hours or so, Rotherham have said they won't be playing any rugby for the rest of this season. So we just wanted to hear John's thoughts about that and kind of Rotherham's stance on the situation as well. And we'll be also including some inserts around the community game with George Foster, who runs the rugby school in Cheshire, about how development of kids rugby has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic. We'll be hearing from Sale Sharks' Sam James as well, who was down at the session and also is involved in Manchester, who are one of just many clubs who have been affected by the coronavirus crisis. And we're speaking to Matt Price as well, who's the community group chairman, and what they do. Their group has been fantastic work over the last couple of months or so, just getting clubs engaged with the local communities, and a bit more detail on that to come later in the podcast. But I am now pleased to say that joining me on this Talking Rugby Union podcast to discuss all things National Leagues is head coach of Blackheath, James Shanahan, final head coach, Warren Spragg, and head coach of Hinckley, Chris Campbell. Guys, thank you so much for giving us your time this evening. And James, let's just start with you, if you don't mind. I mean, I saw your tweet last week about hoping the cup competition in the National Leagues can get up and running as soon as possible. How hopeful are you that this could come to fruition, hopefully at the start of next year?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping it can do. I mean, the medical research is that the issue is obviously the scrum and the maul. Obviously, they're going to take that away, which is frustrating. But if it's a way to get rugby back and playing, then great. I mean, they might have to adapt a few more laws, because for me, it's going to be rugby league with more players and less space, which is not ideal. But we do need some form of rugby ASAP, because, you know, the community game is crying out for it, and not just in the senior level, just, you know, junior level, you know, children's rugby and stuff at the moment suffering. You know, you can go and play football, you can go and play hockey, but you can't play any form of rugby. So yeah, it's pretty frustrating, but hopefully we can get something back. And I'm fairly confident from what John Inverdale said and a couple of conversations I've had with him before.
Yeah, and just for people who aren't kind of aware of the situation that level 3 and 4 teams may have going into 2021. Basically, the proposal is to do something along the lines of the Bob Willis Cup, which was so successful in county cricket. So National 1, National 2 clubs will be put into regional leagues to begin with to limit the amount of travel, and that will move into a national knockout and the potential of a grand finale at Wickenham, which John Inverdale mentioned last week. And there is no obligation for clubs to join this. As we mentioned, Rotherham aren't going to do this at the moment. That is their stance they're currently taking. But Chris, just to sort of bring you in, as James kind of said there, we need a lot of clubs want rugby back, and there is a lot of details still to be ironed out from this, and a lot of stuff that needs to be explained by the NCAA, which will probably come over the next few weeks or so. But do you echo James's point there that clubs do need rugby back more than ever before?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny, isn't it, how we've gone from, you know, thinking that having no scrums and no mauls and whatever would be a disaster, to the point where actually we're saying this is best case scenario for us now. And I think everyone's just desperate to play, aren't they? And I think that the vast majority of us would take anything now. So if that's what we can get and that gets us going sooner, then brilliant. I'm all for it. Bring it on. Let's get it going as quickly as we can.
Mm. And Warren, I mean, normally this time of year, in a normal world, we'd be looking forward to sort of a tough period in the season, exciting Christmas games, exciting derbies, but we are where we are at the moment. But how sort of confident are you to get some sort of competitive rugby, if that is a cup competition, played at Woodlands in 2021?
I don't know about confident, but certainly desperate for it. A group of players who are chomping at the bit. Every time you play in touch and you're telling the players that, you know, you explain what the rules are every time, and you almost got your players on a leash trying to stop them throwing shoulders into each other. You know, the players are desperate to get out and whack somebody for 80 minutes or 70 minutes or whatever it's going to be on a Saturday afternoon, and just get some of this coronavirus frustration out. Ideally, we can do it in front of you know, we can follow non-league football guidelines. You can have 600 people who are paying to come into the club, provide some sort of food for people who are in there, and just kickstart this rugby economy, because, wow, everyone's suffering at the moment. And I know that's replicated across different businesses and everything, but we care about rugby. It's what we've done for our whole lives. And, you know, Fylde is I'm very fortunate to be at a club with a rich history, and we can't afford to let this go on any longer. So anything we can play on a Saturday afternoon with people in watching, just give us some laws and a referee, and we'll crack on and do it.
Yeah, because I saw sort of some of your quotes for him from the local interview that you did. And I guess, like you say there, the excitement of this cup competition is great for us, as for me as a journalist, for you guys as coaches, for the players. But I guess it encompasses everyone involved with the club as well, because it could have a ripple and effect on everybody. It could be from your volunteers coming to the club, the stadium announcer, programme sellers, people behind the bar. It just gives a bit of buzz to these clubs that have been sort of neglected and denied that outlet for so long.
Yeah, I think community clubs are what they say they are. They're a focal point for people in the area to spend the week looking forward to going and doing something on a Saturday afternoon. And whether that means you are turning up and, you know, you're a 75-year-old bloke who's helping lay the kit out before a game, or whether you're a family who like going and, you know, taking the grandkids to run round and watch the first team play on a Saturday afternoon, it's a focal point and a really important thing for people to be able to get back and do. We think we can do it safely. We think we can do it where we can manage all the different, where we can mitigate all the different risks across, you know, across catering, across safe spaces in crowds, across making sure changing rooms and player welfare and everything is looked after through medical provisions are right. We think we can provide everything to the same standards that football would be doing. We need someone to approve the regulations for us.
Yeah, and James, Chris made a good point before about kind of, you know, the engagement of players. And for you as coaches and all of you on the Zoom call now, it must have been such a challenge for you since sort of March to keep everything fresh, keep people eager and enthused when there's, you know, no end goal really in sight. So how much of a challenge has that been for you? And would this cup competition just help sort of get that eagerness and get that enthusiasm back among maybe some players who might be feeling a little bit disengaged at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was really tough. I mean, we didn't start until we moved to Phase C. So I think we started on the 18th of August. I know other clubs chose to start earlier, but I didn't see the point when, you know, realistically, we didn't know when we were going to start. You know, and I've kind of broke it up with 3 weeks on, a week off, and try to break things up like that, which is try to keep them engaged. The boys have been really good, actually. I mean, I think also, you know, getting away and doing something on a Tuesday and Thursday night for an hour, hour and a half, is pretty good for them mentally as well as physically. So I think it's been easier. When it was announced, obviously, that, you know, the league was going to be cancelled, it wasn't a surprise to the players, because I said the likelihood this would happen, but it could be a cup competition, and kind of explained what that could look like, which most of them were like, okay, well, that's great. Obviously, the question they asked, well, will it be rugby? And I said it'd be rugby, but Mark 1, whatever, it's going to be different. But I think majority of the boys are really keen to just play some rugby, just do something, you know. Otherwise, you know, not going till September, you know, you had a year and a half without playing rugby, which, you know, is pretty ridiculous. And we're going to lose people, lose sponsors, lose those 50-50 people that came to watch a game. And that's something we can't do. And same as Warren, look, Blackheath could easily hold 600 people, socially distanced, safe. The players could be safe. You know, obviously the game is the area where the government is worried. But as I said, they've looked at the sides, they put the sides together, and it's all about the front five, the scrum and the maul. As I said, we take it away. Yeah, it's not rugby as we know it, but it's a form of rugby just to get us playing. And hopefully by next September we'll move into real rugby, then so be it, and great, and just, yeah, get something going. Because it's pretty frustrating at the moment for everyone.
Yeah, and Chris, one thing that I think we messaged about as well was sort of the article that Steve Granger did in the Telegraph at the start of last week. And judging by his comments, it seems sort of like the RFU and DCMS are kind of on the same wavelength now. I think the government actually realised that the need will be back. So that has to be important now, because we can't, from me personally, listening to you three, it doesn't seem like we can go on much longer with having no rugby at all, and the detrimental effect it could have on some teams is really big, and that is the harsh reality that some clubs won't be able to survive this. So it does seem like there is some sort of forward movement, even if that is just trickled down to us at the moment.
Yeah, I think it feels like we're probably reaching the limit now. I think, you know, we all start at different times in the summer months, but, you know, training through the summer into September, early October wasn't too challenging to keep people engaged, because, you know, there was the hope there that we'd get starting soon to start with. But also, you know, when the weather's good, it's a bit easier to get people out, et cetera, you know. And as the nights draw in, it gets colder. A lot of people have gone back to work as well, you know, so they have a bit less free time than maybe they did over the summer. And they see other sports and other activities starting. It becomes a challenge. We've got three or four of our players who are playing football on a Saturday at the moment. Now, we're pretty confident they will be back with us when we start playing league rugby, or competitive rugby. But you know, if that goes on much longer and they get really sort of ingrained in those clubs, like they've been ingrained with the rugby club, you do risk not having them back. And it's important that we're talking primarily here about, you know, senior coaching. It's exactly the same throughout the game. And again, I think junior clubs are doing a superb job at holding on to their players, but there does become a limit.
Yeah, absolutely, Christian. We're just going to take a little bit of a break now, and we'll come back to what the guys have talked about a lot there about the adaptation to the laws that potentially we might see in the cup competition, and sort of what effect that will have on players, and also the fact that we could have spectators back in the grounds next year as well. So we'll just take a little bit of a break to talk about some of the interviews that we have coming up, as we mentioned at the start, and then we'll be back with Chris, James and Warren after this. And I'm now joined by Rotherham Titans Commercial Director, John Whaling. John, thank you so much for joining us. And first of all, John, we had a chat a couple of months ago now about kind of what the club were doing at the moment, trying to keep things ticking over. So with the meals and getting people into the clubhouse for those European games, etc. But obviously last night the club announced that their team won't be taking part in any competitive rugby for next season at this stage. So how tough was that decision for the club to take first, John?
Well, it's a very tough decision, but given the circumstances, even with the vaccine, we can't see anybody being allowed in as spectators until at least April. Mm. And without spectators, we just can't afford to put a team out on the pitch.
Mm. I was going to say that's one of the key things I think that a lot of clubs are thinking about at the moment, John, in terms of whether they can get spectators back in into stadiums, into grounds. And I know John Inverdale was quite optimistic about that last week, saying, you know, non-league football are doing it, so why can't National League clubs do it? But I guess it's that uncertainty that everyone's feeling at the moment, that you can't take that gamble, if you like.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we sat down as a board and discussed it, and we decided that we needed to make a decision sooner rather than later for everyone's sake, so everybody knew what the position was and where they all stood. Going into year two in the middle of October, sort of started the downward spiral. Once that you couldn't have parties of six around the table, it made it very, very difficult to make anybody in the clubhouse. The week before we went into lockdown, we put the England-Italy game on the Saturday, but you know the size of our clubhouse. We were absolutely sold out with 30 people. You know, and by the time you've put the staff on to do the food and the staff on to serve at table service, it just weren't worth doing, to be fair. Yeah. And that week, we had our best 4 days takings on the bar because of the restrictions and the extra staff we had to put on. We made very, very little. And even if we'd not gone into lockdown, we would have probably taken the decision to close at that stage.
Yeah, because I was going to say, John, my next question, but I think you've pretty much answered it there. Can you explain sort of the reasons why the club have gone down the route to say they're not playing? But I guess that's exactly that there, that the problem
that's
is
if you can't get people in the clubhouse, if you can't get people through the gate, I don't know what you're supposed to do. And I'll tell you the frustrating thing is all these announcements the government make about the support they're giving you. We haven't had a penny in support from the government in this latest lockdown. The people who went into Tier 3 and decided that they were going to shut up shop and put people on furlough and whatever, they got some money. But even though the government said there were money there for people who tried to carry on, and they knew that we'd be suffering a downturn in takings because of the limitation of two at a table, that money were given to Sheffield City Region, not to Rotherham Council, and Sheffield City Region have still not released that money. So we've been in Tier 2, Tier 3 all lockdown for nearly a month now, and we have not had a penny from central government to help us through that. They also announced this Kickstart scheme, which they said would start in October, where you could get somebody who were on universal credit for 25 hours per week for a charge. We applied for that. We hadn't even had a reply to say whether we'd been accepted, never mind get anybody started. The support that they're claiming is there, just staying there. And it's killing clubs. It really is killing clubs.
Yeah. And I guess as well, John, on that, you know, when we last spoke, we talked about, you know, sponsors hopefully coming in with a bit of money for you guys, but also the crowdfunder. And I guess when you have people dipping into the pockets and giving their all to the club and then you don't get the promises that you're expecting, that makes it, you know, your hands are really, really tied at that point.
Yeah. To be fair, we sent that note out and we subsequently written to everybody who'd bought a season ticket or sponsored a player for this season and explained the situation. And when we gave them a couple of options, one option was to donate the money to the club, and anybody who does that, we're going to create a plaque that will go up in the clubhouse for forever that says during the pandemic of 2021, these people really helped the club through it. And we've done that. Or the other option is that they can roll the season ticket over to next year, you know, and we'll honour it for next season.
Right.
And same with player sponsorship. As at 3 o'clock today, we'd had 27 people replied, and out of the 27 that have replied, 26 have actually donated the money, which is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, John. And just to play a little bit of devil's advocate there, because there may be a lot of clubs listening to this and they may feel like, well, you know, there's an option for Rotherham to potentially play in a cup competition now. But listening to you and sort of the emotion in your voice, it just seems that the long-term future of the club is a lot more important than playing a potential cup competition for a few months next year.
Correct. You know, and the players want to know where they stand as well, because some of these players don't live near us, you know.
Yeah.
They've got jobs at home and they want to know whether to keep their jobs going or whether to back them in and come up to Rotherham. You owe it to everybody to make a decision and let them know what the position is and where they stand. And prolonging the agony, I would call it, is just not fair on anybody. And as I say, when we met last week at the board, it was unanimous that we just needed to tell people that we weren't playing this year. It's just a mess. It really is a mess.
Yeah, and just finally, on what you mentioned before, John, as well, in terms of the waiver support that you've given, you said there at 26 replies, and they've all said they're going to give the money to the club. But I mean, just on Twitter last night, which caught my attention, was so many messages of support, not only from people who are connected with the club, but the National League family as well. And I guess that means a lot for you guys, because we know where Rotherham have come from, you know, the established Championship team, and it's been a tough few years for you guys in the National League, but everyone's rallying around you at this tough time for you.
I'm sure they're having it just as tough as well, you know. The people who are coming out and supporting us, you know, they must be sat there wondering what to do as well. Very, very difficult times. Very difficult times.
So, first of all, George, we are here in a cold November evening, but just how did the Rugby School come about? Because I saw on the website it's about player development, but also it's about developing life skills as well for these kids?
It is. The idea came up a couple of years ago. At the time, I wasn't right due to work commitments, etc. At the start of COVID, I was unfortunately made redundant, so there wasn't a better time to set it up. But then, it came to fruition. We've put out our age groups at Wilmslow Rugby Club, and it's grown from there. We've got kids from Macclesfield, Stockport, Manchester, so on and so forth. So it's everyone's been really receptive to it. It's gone really well so far.
I was going to say, obviously, during a pandemic like this, it's always going to be tough to get kids out and play rugby. But, you know, on Monday night here, loads of kids down. It must be so encouraging for you.
It is. I mean, there's so much competition in the Wilmslow area. But again, the parents, we already had that buy-in because we've been coaching down here for such a long period of time. So we try and keep things really personable so that we have that relationship with the kids. And it just seems to grow. It snowballs from there. So it's been really effective.
Is that key in terms of keeping kids engaged? Because we know at the moment participation levels in rugby are going down a little bit because of the pandemic. But I guess when you have that personal aspect to it, you do have to keep things fresh and keep them engaged at all times.
You do. You have to. It's so important. I mean, some of the clubs around the area, it does become a bit almost crash-like, and that was something we were really keen not to create. We wanted an environment that the kids felt really comfortable coming up and speaking to the other coach, Steve, and I about not just rugby, but any issues in day-to-day life, stuff that we're doing at school, anything at all. We want them to feel really comfortable in this environment. It's key to keep them engaged in the sport.
And I guess that ethos is even more so now because of the climate we're living in, that it's key for people to have a chat and have a talk about things that they are struggling.
They do. I mean, I've had some wobbles in the past. I think most adults have it. And as you say, even more so now than ever. So, yeah, it's really key to, I don't know, tap into the children's psyche. I think it's so important to get into the kids at such an early age because education, especially when it comes to mental health, is really, really important.
And from a personal point of view as well, George, it's great, obviously, that you've got this going on, but do you kind of look at the wider picture as well for community rugby, that this thing like you are doing here tonight is a shining light in a difficult period?
I hope so. I mean, time will tell, but I think it's, you know, with the funding coming out of community rugby, and we're really feeling the effects of it. So, you know, it's really, we're really keen that we push this out, not just at Wilmslow, but again, it's going to take time, but it's certainly something at the moment.
And I guess when you can bring people like Sam down as well, that only helps sort of generate the interest.
You know, there's a little bit of faith in us that the professionals are really engaging with all the kids as well. Sam, as I was saying earlier on, has been playing since he was four and went to a local school. And I think the kids, you know, really look up to people like Sam being a local lad. It's quite inspirational for them. And yeah, I mean, they were big smiles on their faces tonight. So yeah, all good.
And I guess as well, it works both ways. It, you know, as George says, the kids have a smile on your face, but you absolutely happy to take the time out and speak to these kids and give them that inspiration during this time.
No, exactly that. It's always nice to come down to a local club of mine, even if it wasn't my first club at heart. We've been in Manchester, lad. But no, you just see the enjoyment on their face tonight. They love being down here. And I can remember when I was this sort of age, wanting to get out there every single night, wanting to do something different. And I think this is a fantastic idea. And the enjoyment that the kids provided tonight was great.
And like I said to George there, obviously, we are going through a tough time with the community rugby, but seeing things like this, even if, you know, you're at the top of the game right now, but it must be so pleasing.
Yeah, of course. If you come down, you'll get a glimpse of it. But he was saying before, he put the idea out to a couple of parents and they had floods and masses of kids coming in, and it shows the buy-in of the local areas, the local schools we were talking about before, that the kids want to be getting out there, especially in such a difficult time like this. It's just an energy release for them and to have fun with their mates in somewhere other than a school environment.
And from a personal point of view as well, local lads seeing these kids come down, it must be really heartwarming as well that, you know, these kids are still wanting to come out in the evening and, you know, stood in pouring rain.
Yeah, well, it was actually nice before. It's only just turned since I turned up. But no, it is. It's really nice. And I spoke to a couple of them before, because I've done a thing at my old primary school, Gorsey Bank. But it's nice to give them that sort of that pathway to show that these are the steps that I did. I'm a local lad, same with my brother, and we've kind of come up around this area and made it through to what this is, and hopefully that keeps him in the game and keeps him playing and wanting to come down.
And you talked about your link with Manchester. I know on Friday it was a tough decision that the RFU made to sort of end the season and not going to be a league season for the adult game at the moment. I mean, how tough of a decision is that? Because these lads are, you know, training every day, well, training Tuesday, Thursdays probably, and now they haven't got that league season to look forward to.
Yeah, it's massive. It's just a bit of a sort of morale issue really. It's kind of the only thing that we're kind of looking forward to. We'll obviously have to play it by ear with terms of the lockdown and stuff like that, but especially over these winter months, it's sort of something that really improves your sort of mental health for most of these lads. It's a big blowout for them. They get to come round, like they're saying, whether it's the little kids tonight or whether they're fully grown men, they still want to come run, pass a ball around with their mates. So they're taking that away from them as soon as winter comes. I think we'll have to obviously evaluate once those 4 weeks, hopefully something that's lifted, and hopefully we'll be able to get back to some sort of training routine and keep it fun for them and have touch tournaments, whatever it may be, just to keep things alive and keep boys coming down to the club.
So I'm joined by Matt Price, who is the chairman of the community group on the Talking Rugby Union podcast. Matt, thanks so much for giving us your time today. And first and foremost, let's just have a little bit of a chat about what the community group do, because I've seen, you know, your logos popped up on social media a few times over the last few weeks, and I've seen a couple of articles written about you guys as well. So just tell us a bit about what the community group is all about.
So we are a community group. We go in and form community departments for clubs, and we look at community engagement and how rugby clubs can really engage the community with which they sit in. And quite a lot of people think that community is just coaching in schools and things like that, and camps maybe, but it's actually a lot more than that. So we focus on, as well as the schools coaching camps, we focus on writing bids for projects to go out and deliver various things, delivering meals to vulnerable people in this time that we've been pretty successful with one of our partner clubs in Richmond. We work with mentoring children, obviously at Chinner, and there's various bids and projects that we write and do. Walking rugby for over 55s has been a great one for us. So we do all of that, and what it is actually, you know, we try and provide support right from the ages of 3 years old all the way through to your walking rugby over 55s. And how do we help clubs and support clubs in that engagement? And that's really where we sit in and do it.
Yeah, and I guess, Matt, as well, do you see it as a win-win for, first of all, the community group, and second of all, for the club themselves? Because if you look from a club perspective, they'll go, well, having you guys on board will help us focus on other things in the club. So that might be recruitment, it might be tactics, it might be whatever. And they know full well that they've got a group like community group who have a proven track record looking after their community department, increasing that engagement and increasing the profile in the community.
Exactly that. And I still think people at rugby clubs, it's still an unknown area in how to actually engage those children, how to get the very best of working with, you know, your local estate agent that wants to get involved in the club, and how can we harbour that. I think the days of local businesses and sponsors fully going, you know, here's, you know, X amount to sponsor. Actually, they want, you know, businesses want a community aspect to it. And how can our funds, which are pretty tight at the moment, but how can our funds really impact the club and the community? And that's, you know, that's where we work with clubs and harbour all of those links and put it all in. Everything that we do, it has to be sustainable. It has to be financially viable. And that's the big thing that we work on is the whole revenue into the club and how the club can then reinvest that back into the community to get more people involved in the game and coming to the club and volunteering, becoming members, supporters, players. And that's what we try and do. But ultimately, it's got to be sustainable.
Yeah, and you mentioned kind of the wide age range, which you cover. You know, you said walking rugby down to getting kids involved. But in terms of the clubs itself, it isn't just focusing on a couple of leagues, is it? You are helping clubs at the top level right down to level 8 and level 9.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we work from level 2 with Richmond in the championship now, all the way down to, you know, level 7 clubs, 8, 9s we can work with. What we've done at Community Group is able to siphon off the areas where a club might need a little bit more support. Right. Not every rugby club can come in and have a full community department straight off the bat. It just wouldn't work. So there might be an area where they might want to look at, well, actually we could do with some sponsorship support. So our head of sponsorship will be able to work with the club on that front. Our social media, which Jack runs, You know, could they get a little bit more info out about the club and run that side and support on that? And that's where we can sit on that. Writing bids, for instance, we have a number of bid writers that work with us that we can actually access some of those pots for some of the clubs. So it's not just a big package, you've got to go full hog. It's actually, where can we support that club to get the very best at that stage? Everybody's at a different stage, especially now, in terms of where they sit and what have you. And actually, we've got to try and support them the best way we can.
Yeah, and just on the current situation, because I know Fylde have launched their sort of foundation. I know you guys are very much a part of that. Was that kind of exactly what you just said there, Matt, that everyone's in different stages at the moment because of the current climate we're in, and you sort of have gone in there to Fylde and hit something that they probably need at the moment, which hopefully we'll see them grow in the future?
Well, Fylde, the area there and the rugby club, I mean, it's steeped in history, that rugby club, obviously with Sir Bill Beaumont there and everybody else there. It's a club that is a fantastic club. But what we focused on there and what we realised is that actually a foundation and the charitable purposes there would sit better than actually it sitting with the club. So we formed a charity which took sort of nine months, 12 months. We were due to launch at the start of April, but obviously everything kicked off. So we delayed that and we started sort of August, September this year. And it's absolutely flying now. I mean, we've been awarded some pots of funding. We've had some sponsors come on board and want to get involved with delivering breakfast clubs with the Boathouse Youth to vulnerable children. And we just had a camp there, the first one really properly that we've done there with children. And we had 70 odd children, and 15 of those, you know, were free places to local vulnerable children. So it's a massive, massive area, but it's a really good foundation that we've got going there.
I was going to say, you must have had obstacles and challenges, Matt, during this time, as you mentioned, from April up until now, where everything's been not normal, if you like, but you must be really pleased when you do see camps at Fylde doing well. And I saw on social media, was it 429 children across 7 camps, which is a record for you guys so far. And considering all this, you know, negativity around rugby and player engagement and stuff like that, that must be so pleasing that your work is certainly making a difference during this time.
Yeah, I mean, prior to the pandemic starting, we were in, I think it was 186 schools each week across all of our departments. That was on the Friday. The Monday, they closed all the schools. We went down to 2 schools and one personal home. So it's a massive drop for our clubs. Coming full circle now, and we sort of September, October, November now into the new academic year, obviously into a new lockdown, but schools are still wanting that engagement. And what is pleasing to see is that even though we are in a pandemic, it has highlighted how important a community department is and how important a rugby club plays in that role. You know, it is vital that we get people after lockdown back into rugby clubs and back engaging with them, because they're a community hub. And we've done some great work. You know, the camps, all the heads of the communities have really driven that and pushed hard on that. And it just shows you how many children and how many parents really, really want to get back into their rugby club and playing. And 429 children across the 7 camps was fantastic. And, you know, we just can't wait to get back properly and get going again.
Yeah, and just a couple more from me, Matt. I mean, that's all the stuff, so those multi-sport camps, those skills camps are on the pitch. But you mentioned before Richmond's effort off the pitch in terms of the school meals. And I know Mr. Marcus Rashford has been in sort of interacting with Richmond and giving them congratulations as well. So that aspect must as well be as equally as pleasing for you, that Richmond are taking it on board themselves to go out and deliver these school meals, as well as the work they're doing on the pitch as well.
Yeah, well, the community is what it is, isn't it? You know, the department supports everybody. It's not just about, you know, the people that can access and get into the rugby club. It's about, you know, supporting people that maybe can't and, you know, might have finances a barrier or might have transport issues. You know, actually, how can we support those people to get involved and you know, not just come involved in playing rugby, but also, you know, living and making sure that you know, through this period, you are living in, and all children are eating, and everybody is getting through this period, both, you know, mentally and physically. It's, you know, it's an important role that we play, and you know, I'm really proud of all of our heads of communities and teams and community rugby coaches, that they all support that and work for it.
Yeah. Well, brilliant, Matt. It's been great to chat to you on Talking Rugby In today. Obviously, brilliant, all the work you're doing, and it's glad to hear it's going to continue during this period into the new year. I mean, in terms of clubs getting in touch with you, Matt, obviously you're not exclusive to just the 7 clubs that you're working with at the moment. Is it just as simple as going on your website and contacting yourselves from there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, have a look at our social media and have a look at our website, which is community-group.co.uk. Have a look at that. You can easily get in touch with us, or even if you just want to get in touch with one of the clubs that's one of our partners, you know, Richmond, Esher, Chinner, Kenilworth and Stourbridge, Bourneville, Fylde, one of those, if it's near you, get in touch and speak to those guys, or get directly in touch with us. We can, you know, the big thing from us is that we can support on any level, and we really are there to try and help clubs.
Brilliant. And we'll put all the sort of links in the podcast description as well, so you can easily find them if you listen to this bit with Matt. But Matt, thank you so much for your time, and it's been a pleasure to chat to you on Talking Rugby Union.
Yeah, top man. Thanks, mate.
So many thanks to George, to John, to Sam and to Matt for their time and their conversations. They're pretty important stuff they were all talking about, especially George and Sam with the rugby school and how vital that has been to keep kids engaged. And when I went down there the other week, they loved every single minute of the session, because it just gave them a bit of normality, but at the same time it was all about self-development for these kids, and that can't be underestimated at the moment. Unfortunately, those sessions can't go on at the moment because we're in stage A, but hopefully they will return in the next few weeks. But as everyone has spoken about there, it is important that community rugby can still thrive, hopefully after this latest lockdown. Let's just bring it back to the cup competition for the final part of the podcast. And James, you mentioned before kind of the adaptation to the laws and what it would mean for National League clubs if this cup competition was to go ahead in 2021. And John and Vidal said last week that the NCAA exec were pretty unanimous about rugby getting started as quickly as possible. And maybe 4-5 months ago, James, we would have maybe laughed and said, no, we want scrums and mauls to be put in place, because those are the absolute elements of the game that need to be there. But that's, now we're in a situation where we can't really say that, and it's a price you have to pay.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, yeah, I was one of them. You know, I obviously wanted competitive, proper league rugby with scrums, etc., mauls. But that was probably at a time when we were being told that hopefully things would be okay, kind of in October, etc. So you're thinking, all right, we'll delay it till November, we'll get cracking. Obviously, that became apparent once, you know, schools, universities, people went back to work, funny enough, more testing, there's more cases, and therefore that was never going to happen. So yeah, to have a cup competition, look, I mean, it's completely different. It's a bit of a challenge for coaches, just because of not having the ability to have a power game, really, with a scrum and with a maul, which is massive to a lot of teams, and all teams, really, it should be. It just means we've got to think outside the box, which is exciting. Yeah, to have kind of local games and then go into hopefully a national cup, and then combining the whole of National League, which I think is something different. So I think we have to really grasp it, really enjoy it, and just take it as a challenge and hope it's just for this season. We can kind of get back into, you know, our competitive rugby come September. But yeah, it's definitely something to look forward to. And yeah, once we kind of get a go ahead or we get a start date, I'm sure there's going to be a massive buzz across all the teams across the country. And, you know, I know, you know, spoken earlier about Rotherham saying they're not going to do anything, and there's a couple other clubs like that. It's a real shame, you know, but if it means that's going to mean they're going to survive and come back in September, then that's their choice. I do think, obviously, if we don't get crowds, then actually there's going to be a lot of clubs not doing that unless players are going to play for free, which, to be honest, could still happen, because I'm sure players want to play rugby. I know they get paid, but it's not a National League level. It's not huge amounts of money. You know, it's nice, it's good money, and it helps, but it's not the be-all and end-all. So I would still hope there would be some competition, even if there weren't crowds, but we desperately need crowds, and I don't see why you can't when football's been having them for quite a while. So fingers crossed, we get the go-ahead, we get started in January, and we can look forward to a Rugby Mark II and the challenges that it will bring for coaches and players. And I'm sure something we can adapt to and overcome and make it a real good kind of competition and something very exciting.
Yeah, and we want to stay positive, James, as much as we can about this kind of thing. But you touched on it there, which was a key point, that you know players might not get paid to potentially play, and that might be a concern for a few guys who are training on a Tuesday and Thursday to play an adapted version of the game in a cup competition. Think, I'm not going to get played. Is it even worth it? So is that a concern for coaches, do you think?
I think it is a concern, but I don't know. I mean, I'd still play. I'd happily play, so it wouldn't bother me, but I'm different. Rugby's been my life, like a lot of coaches is kind of. So, you know, if I didn't get paid to play rugby or coach rugby, I'd have another job, but I'd still be involved in rugby. I know the new generation is a little bit different because they've been used to being paid. But I still think, in essence, they want to play rugby and they want to run around with their mates, and hopefully they can have a social distance beer or whatever it is afterwards, because that's just as important what happens on the field as it does off the field. So, you know, we've all got great memories of what we've done on the field, but we've also got great memories off the field as players. So, yeah, just need some form of rugby back where we can all enjoy, yeah, being part of a great sport.
Yeah. On that, Warren, one of the concerns that some players might have, in particular the front row players, because of the absence of potentially scrums and mauls for the cup competition. I mean, do you feel that is a genuine concern that you might be without front row players, they may be disengaged with it, or are clubs looking proactively to try and get these players involved where they can?
Yeah, I think props take a lot of they take a lot of stick around the rugby world, but we do all actually love them and we respect them and we know what they bring to the game. So yeah, if we have to treat them a little bit differently for a while, or we can't let them push things that around the way they normally do, we'll still find they will still have a place. If we play in adapted laws, they will still be fully part of the game. I mean, look, from a file perspective, our captain was a tight head prop and he retired at the end of the last season, and we were going into this season with a group of real young lads. So they've probably helped them having a little bit of a little bit more time to grow and learn and be able to step up to the adult game. And our starting loose head from last season running a marathon in December, so there's no way that he's physically going to be able to pat down in National League level scrums come January. So look, lads are adaptable creatures, and yeah, there'll still be a place for them.
Yeah, and Chris, do the players need to have a say in this? I know the NCAA want to consult players and speak to them about this, but is it paramount that the players do get a say in what happens going forward?
Yeah, they have to, because ultimately it's a player's game, and if the players don't want to be a part of it, then we haven't got a game to play. In particular, because as James said, there's a strong reality that pay is going to be reduced or non-existent in some place. I think it's far too early to answer that question, because, you know, we've got so many questions around a lot of clubs, around sponsors, around crowds, around dinners, et cetera, et cetera. Which it's only when clubs get the answer to them, they're actually going to be able to firm up what that looks like. So we've got to have a product which they want to be involved in. But ultimately, I don't think once we get playing, if it's as it's being muted, we haven't got anything firm yet, of course. I don't think when we get playing, it will look all that different from what we're used to. And, you know, and if anything, it will be great fun to be a part of, especially as it starts getting warm. It will be interesting on a mud bath at Hinckley in January. But as we hit into the summer, it could be quite nice.
Yeah, and one thing that will make it possibly extra special as well, James, as we talked about there, is the potential of spectators coming back in. And John at Rotherham spoke on the podcast before about that is primarily the main reason why they aren't going to continue playing. And so how much and how special would it be, James, to have spectators back in grounds up and down the country? Because while we might have an adapted game and it might not feel normal, having spectators there will just add to that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, like Warren said about it earlier, just the community feel about it, and people on a Saturday afternoon popping down to the club to, you know, watch a game of rugby. You know, not having the ability to do that has been pretty tough. You know, not being able to watch any kind of live sport has been pretty tough, you know, except on TV. But, you know, with your fake noise and your fake crowd, it's really tough. No, I think it's huge. I mean, look, our average attendance was about 600 last year, so it's not going to make a difference. I mean, we did have someone kind of say, yeah, but for local derbies, we get 1,000. I said, well, at the moment, we're getting no one. So I'd rather take 600 for how many games it is or we get than having nobody. I don't see why we can't. You know, most grounds at the National League level are big open spaces which can easily hold 600 plus social distance bar, catering facilities, change rooms, etc. I don't see it being an issue. You know, at, say, Championship, Premiership, yeah, it becomes an issue because you've got stadiums, you've got, and stuff, you need stewards, and there's a lot more detail. So I think it's easier, hence why probably the football happened, non-league football, to allow rugby to happen. And, you know, it needs to happen because otherwise clubs are going to be, yeah, in a really bad state when we do come back in, say, next September. And, you know, I think Chris said it, you know, and I think Warren said it as well, is that, you know, rugby's our sport, it's our life. So, you know, other people may think, well, it's only rugby. Well, yeah, but they've surely got something in their life, and we don't say, well, it's only that. So, yeah, we need rugby back ASAP, however it happens, and when it happens, I think it'll be a real buzz, and everyone will be looking forward to it. I mean, even the internationals that have been on, everyone's been looking forward to those, even though there is no crowd and the games maybe haven't been great, but it was just nice to be watching rugby on TV that wasn't in the Southern Hemisphere, you know. So hopefully we can get back ASAP.
Yeah, and Warren, just finally, one of the things that you touched on before, which was quite interesting, which I wanted to lead till the end, is kind of, you said that rugby clubs are probably some of the safest environments at the moment because you are taking all those protocols. And as James quite rightly says, I mean, I've been to the majority of National League clubs. You guys have travelled home and away for how many ever years. You know, the clubs are big open spaces. You can get, you know, socially distant crowds around the ground and in the clubhouses. So is that one of maybe the frustration, but also you can look at it as a positive as well, that you guys are taking all these precautions anyway. You know what you can do. It's kind of just getting that government approval now to make it happen.
Yeah, we've tried to go above and beyond with our, you know, with our training protocols. So in terms of Tuesday and Thursday training nights, we've just tried to get the players into really good habits of completing an online daily coronavirus symptom checker. When they turn up at training, they've got a one-way system that they have to follow. They're temperature checked before training. We don't go in the change rooms even though the weather's terrible. We've completely adapted to whatever this sort of worst case scenario of a new normal, we've adapted to it. So once there's an approval, there's not then a big shock of, oh, now we need to do anything differently. We will be completely ready to go as a playing group. The club has been open when they were able to be open in terms of, you know, limited bar usage. There's been a change in terms of the catering provision at the club. So that's now under the club's management rather than an external company. And the club are, you know, prepared and able to deliver a range for either the minimum provision up to hopefully full pre-match provision, but everyone is ready to go. We just need a set of guidelines and a date to get moving.
Yeah. And Chris, I saw you nod along there, fully in agreement with Warren and what James has said.
Absolutely, I think rugby clubs are remarkably resilient places, and I think we are all ready to go. And excited to go. Let's just give us this approvals and we'll demonstrate that we're able to work safely and provide something to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I was going to ask you what you hope to happen over the next couple of months or so, but I think between the three of you, you've pretty much said exactly what you want to happen. Hopefully we do get this cup competition in place. But many thanks to Warren, to Chris and to James for their time this evening on the Talking Rugby Union podcast. Thanks so much as well to the guys who have helped with the inserts during this interview. Like I said there, hopefully the community game can return, and for the NCAA clubs, hopefully it will be in a cup competition format as well. But that has been a Talking Rugby Union podcast.